screaming hero rewatch as a desperate call for excitement into the void.
Yeah, I decided screw calm, collected NPR Austin. We're back to regular old misspeaking, yelling, needing approval Austin.
Welcome back. Well, I'm also regular Marley Halpern Grazer, and I'm some age, 37, I think.
Yeah.
No, wait, I might be 38. How old am I?
Are you not? Yeah, you're 37,
okay,
right?
Okay, good. I truly forget sometimes. See, part of my problem is I always kind of inflate. I'm always like, oh, I'm 37. That means I'm almost 38. And then after a few months of that, I'm like, I'm 38.
That sounds like a condition, Marley. Right?
Yeah. So I'm Marley Halpern Grazer, basically 40. I'm an animation writer. I've written a lot of cartoons. Some of
Look,
them have
if,
superheroes.
If you don't know who Marley is at this point, how'd you get here? You know, what's going on?
What if someone has just started listening to the podcast and they're like, I want to listen to the most recent episode. Oh, it's Ant-Man and the Wasp. That's my favorite movie. Lucky me that I've started listening right now.
And they're like, I've never heard of Austin or Marley. I need to hear their credits up front or I'm leaving. I'm interested in the podcast, but only if I find out that they're moderately successful.
If people don't know that you make TikToks for the New York Public Library, why would they value your opinion?
Yeah. And, you know, we're 12 years apart in age.
Yeah, I was going to say, people might not know that part. You could find this podcast and not know that we're 12 years apart in age, making you basically the age I was when these Marvel movies that we're watching came out.
Yeah.
Not really true anymore, because now we're talking about a movie from 2018. It's Ant-Man and the Wasp.
It came out 4 years ago, so when this movie came out, I was 21.
Mm-hmm.
And how old were you, Marley?
4 years ago? Well, if I am 37, and the jury is out on that, then I was 33 when this movie came out.
Okay, yeah. So you're going from early 30s to late 30s.
Yeah. So I probably thought I was 35. I was 33.
this one's fun for me because I saw this movie at 11 a.m. by myself at an Alamo draft house before working a shift at a restaurant. So this is the movie I most saw as a regular American working stiff,
mm-hmm.
where I was just like, all right. Nobody's going to want to see Ant-Man and the Wasp with me. Let's eat some breakfast at Alamo and get this done. And I watched it, and I bet you we didn't talk about this movie when it came out. I don't really think we even had a long... I don't know
so
if we had a conversation about this one.
I don't know if we had a long conversation, but I do remember, Austin, that through the weird quirk of Marvel's specifically recent publishing history, you and I were specifically fans of the Iron Man villain, the Ghost.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we talked about the way Ghost is adapted in this movie, because we were both like really excited for Ghost to be in an Iron Man movie, and then they kept not using him. And then suddenly he's the villains in this movie, she's a woman in this movie. And
she's just like Ghost in the comics.
Yeah, I know. There's no way we didn't talk about it just because of our weird shared appreciation for this very obscure villain I was sure was going to show up in like Iron Man 3 and then didn't.
Yeah, yeah, because Ghost was in a Thunderbolts comic that we were reading.
Yeah, and we just thought he was cool.
He has such a cool design.
I know.
He's so cool looking. He doesn't really come through in this movie.
No, well, because some of the things that make Ghost look cool in that Thunderbolts comic are like artistic stylizations that can't really be done in a movie, because like she's got the mask in this movie and she's got the basic design, but like what makes Ghost cool in the comic is that he's like too skinny to be a person, and he's like hanging in the air in weird inhuman positions.
Yeah, in the comics Ghost can fly,
yeah,
and is floating around.
He's always floating.
And you know, I just thought of this. Doug Jones could have done it. It had just been Doug Jones in an outfit.
Yeah.
Be like,
Doug Jones should have played Ghost. That would have been very
cool. I hate to say, hey, it should have been this white man. It's been in all these movies. But, you know, you would have said he looked weird.
Yeah. You know what? I am actually going to look up. I'm going to see if I can find Ghost's very, very first appearance. Okay. So you know what? When Ghost was initially an Iron Man villain, he looked exactly like Moon Knight.
Oh.
And Ghost in this movie does kind of look like Moon Knight.
Yeah.
So she is actually a pretty faithful adaptation of original Ghost design. The Ghost we're thinking of was a pretty big redesign, actually.
Oh.
Yeah, actually, this is literally Moon Knight. Someone should get in trouble for how much Ghost looks like Moon Knight. He's got,
which came first?
He's got the same cape that Moon Knight used to have. This, you know what? This is gonna be touch and go. This could go either way. You want to take a bet?
I think Ghost is first.
Okay, let's see. So Ghost was invented in, it's not looking good. Ghost was invented in June 1987. Yeah, Moon Knight is 10 full years before Ghost and looks identical.
Okay, that's really bad. Well, just, I was thinking if it was the other way, I could understand creating Moon Knight and not realizing he looked like an obscure Iron Man villain.
Oh, yeah, right. And also, like, if you've got this great design for this villain you almost never use, why not use it again for a real character?
Yeah, but Moon Knight
was,
sure,
by 1987, that's probably the height of Moon. That was probably right in the middle of Moon Knight's one big successful comic he's ever had.
Yeah, so more likely that's just to show how little thought was put into Ghost.
Yes.
It was like a Deadpool-esque situation where the way that Deadpool got created is they were introducing three new badass ninja characters into a comic.
Yeah.
One comic, three new ninjas show up.
Yeah.
And the writer was like, can one of them make jokes? How are they going to be different?
Yeah, how do I write three of these guys?
So Ghost is just one of those guys.
My favorite thing is because the writer named Deadpool Wade Wilson, and that was a reference to Deathstroke Slade Wilson, because the writer thought that Deadpool kind of looked like Deathstroke to him. The artist, Rob Liefeld, really resents that because of that, everyone thinks he was copying Deathstroke when he created Deadpool, because as he says, he was copying Spider-Man.
Oh.
He's like, why do people say Deathstroke? I was just drawing Spider-Man.
Yeah, Rob Liefeld, one of the creative geniuses of the industry. What isn't it like also Domino is introduced in that comic?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, it's probably, there's a very good chance that Domino, Deadpool, probably Gideon, maybe Kane, they're probably all in that same issue.
Yeah, so I just re-listened to our Ant-Man episode.
Okay.
And it's interesting because, you know, I didn't really like Ant-Man that much, especially on this rewatch. I think that's partially because it's comedies age a little bit worse because you know the jokes. And
yes.
Stuff.
Yeah, we have found that it kind of really, I really think except for Spider-Man, I think Spider-Man Homecoming is the only movie we rewatched that I would say its primary strengths are humor. And I liked the humor just as much, if not more, on a rewatch. I think I appreciated the comedy of Homecoming more when I rewatched it. And that has even movies like Ragnarok that I still love, I just obviously just didn't laugh when I rewatched it because I remember the jokes.
Yeah, well, also because Ragnarok isn't a movie that we kind of remember. It's a movie we remember every line of.
Yeah, Ragnarok's a movie I've memorized and could probably do a play of with very little prep time.
Yeah, yeah. So Patreon goal, Halpern Grazer Brothers do Ragnarok.
We're great at accents, so you know it's going to be good since everyone in that movie is Australian.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Every single person. You know what? I usually forget to do the retractions no one cares about. I kind of implied Cate Blanchett was English when we talked about that movie, and she's Australian, obviously. Everybody in that movie is Australian.
Australian pride. I don't know if I knew that.
Yeah, it's probably why she's in that movie and why she's in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, she's nearby.
She's nearby.
Oh, yeah, I was just saying that they didn't think they made an issue with Ant-Man. Ant-Man made a cool half bill. billion. Mm. And I would say this movie is exactly like Ant-Man 1. And I have pretty much exactly the same problems with it. And I think maybe the problems that we had with the first one are worse in this one. Maybe across the board.
Yeah, I have a few problems with the first one that I don't have with this one. Yeah, I basically agree.
I think you're going to like, you like Ant-Man more than I do, I think. And I would yes. guess you will like this one more than I do.
Yes. And I also like, yeah, and I also like I do want to talk a little bit about how I think these movies and the Guardian movies are so exponentially less based on any specific comic than any of the other movies. Like, you say, ever since we've both gotten the Marvel Unlimited app, we've both started doing a lot more like research and like reading the direct source material. Like, we know the characters, but sometimes we've never read the actual story that's being adapted in the particular movie. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we've both done a lot more of that. And so because of that, we've been talking a lot more about the comics and the comparisons to the comics. And so when we were doing this episode, you asked me so that you could read the same comics as me. You're like, oh, what comics might you read for Ant-Man and the Wasp? And like, I literally cannot think of a comic there'd be any point in reading before talking about this movie, because this movie's just not based on a comic.
Yeah. I mean, to the point that, like, this is a little bit unrelated, but, like, you know, Ghost is an Iron Man villain, and you can tell how fucked you are making an Ant-Man movie that you use an Iron Man villain. No. You're like, okay, well, who do we got? Oh, let's use this Iron Man. Let's see. This character wasn't good enough for an Iron Man movie? What the fuck?
Yeah, I mean, Iron Man probably, like, Iron Man's, like, the amount that Iron Man is a good character versus how bad every Iron Man villain is might be one of the worst ratios in mainstream comics. Like, there might not be another character as good as Iron Man with as few good villains. And when you're using one of his bad ones...
Yeah. I mean, I really think Ghost... It probably is partially because Ghost was in a lot of comics at that point, and
yeah, like was cool. When they were at, like, yeah, like when they were writing this movie, there was a comic where Ghost was a main character as like an anti-hero, and he was very cool. He's really cool in that Thunderbolts comic.
Yeah, and you know the biggest thing that they didn't do in this movie that they should have done is have Ghost always be covered in flies because he's so stinky and won't shower. And also, Ghost will never take off the suit, right? I think is
yeah. What it's just yeah, he won't take off the suit. And also, like, I feel sort of similarly about Ghost as I feel about Taskmaster in the Black Widow movie, which we've, you know, never talked about. But, like, there's this weird thing where Marvel, there's a couple of times, I mean, just these two, where they take a character that is... a sort of generic, I mean, well, Ghost's not generic, he's got like a personality, but they take a character that has kind of a cool look and a cool power, but nobody really knows anything about who they are as a person.
Yeah.
And they just make up a completely new person to be the person in that cool costume with that cool power. And in these two cases, they take a male character and make it a female character. And so it puts me in a weird position where there's all these kind of like shitty online guys who clearly are just mad that it's a woman now. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, they ruined the character, but really they're just upset that it's a woman. Meanwhile, I do think they ruined the character.
Yeah.
But I like, it's because I liked the personality. Like,
well,
there's
in,
no
in both there's... cases, what they do is they take away the character's agencies and make them yeah. way less capable and like way less. Yeah. It, like, Ghost and Taskmaster both are characters who are like, Ghost is like a genius hacker or whatever, and
yeah.
Taskmaster's the greatest fighter ever, and then they turn them both into like victims who are just doing these things because they've been traumatized so much.
Yeah, and like Ghost, especially in the Thunderbolts comic we were reading, but I think even in the 80s Iron Man comics, Ghost thing was being like, he was like a mercenary who would get hired to do like corporate espionage, but like he was doing it because he was anti-capitalist and basically just like destroying corporations because mm-hmm. he thought they were all bad. And so he was basically funding his anti-corporate agenda by getting other corporations to pay him to do it. And like, I don't know, that's neat.
Yeah. And he's covered in flies.
Yeah, he won't bathe. He's like a weird, I want to say like a weird libertarian, but I guess not because libertarians love business. So yeah, he's just like a conspiracy-minded anti-corporate weirdo who won't shower.
Extra smelly Julian Assange.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he got pretty smelly. I think that's why, I think he lost his, embassy privileges because he wouldn't shower.
So just Julian Assange.
He's just, yeah. Ghost is pretty much just if Julian Assange was that pasty because he had ghost powers.
Yeah, yeah. Ghost is an explanation for why Julian Assange is like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Instead of being like that for no reason.
So yeah, it's like I would have loved to see this actress play a character more like Comics Ghost.
Yeah, and it's the same thing where, like, you know, she's still, like, pretty in this movie and stuff. And
yeah,
she should be a trash pile. I don't know.
Yeah, she can't really leave that containment room that she's in. She should be all weird looking.
Yeah, and covered in flies. And also, like, I mean, the thing that's weird, the big... This movie has the same issues, I feel like, in the first one, where I'm just like, what is going on structurally? And there's just so many different things that they do just to make the plot work. And, like, it's like everything has to happen on this day for just an arbitrary reason. And it's another situation where, like, probably Wasp should be the main character. It doesn't really make sense. Scott doesn't care about anything that's happening in the movie.
Yeah. That's so I did make a note of that. So like because the broad strokes log line of this movie, for those of you who don't remember any of it, like my wife Josie didn't when I was talking to her about it.
Yeah, me 48 hours ago.
Yeah, so if you're Austin 48 hours ago, the broad strokes of this movie are Scott Lang is on house arrest because of helping Captain America in Civil War. He is on his last 2 days of house arrest, and then his assigned FBI agent, Randall Parks, Jimmy Woo, will let him out. He's awesome in this. I'm really glad he comes back in WandaVision because he's good in this. I'm glad we got to see more of him.
Yeah, he at this time was like one of our favorite up-and-coming comedic actors.
Oh, yeah. I was so excited to see him in this, and I still am. He's probably the best part of the movie. So Scott Lang is on his last 2 days of house arrest. He has a great relationship with his ex-wife and her cop husband now.
Yeah, his life is actually perfect now. He has a business. He has a great relationship with his daughter.
Him and all the ex-cons have started a security business. He's working remotely from home because he can't leave his house. But that's all going to change in 2 days, baby. And then the other thing that's happening is... Hope Van Dyne and Hank Pym realize they should be looking for Janet Van Dyne, the original Wasp, something they just weren't doing before.
Yeah.
She's in the quantum realm. Because Scott went to the quantum realm and then came back, now they know it's possible.
For short, we're just going to call it the quantum.
The quantum.
The quantum.
I mean, thank goodness we're not talking about Ant-Man and Wasp Quantum Mania, the next one. They looked at this movie and said, you know what this movie didn't do? Say the word quantum enough. Let's put it in the title next time.
Yeah, and then Scott has a vision.
Oh, here's... So you see a flashback of CG de-aged Michael Douglas, he looks worse than in the first one.
Yeah, that's the opening of the film.
Yeah.
Is they get right back in. I just think they shouldn't have gotten Janet. I think I think she should just be dead. I don't...
Oh, really? You think it was...
I don't know what their plan is for her.
Right.
But I don't know why they thought they needed another
Wasp.
They needed to get her.
Well, because that's the whole plot. I mean, nothing else happens in this movie except getting her. That's the movie.
I know. I think the movie should have been a different movie. Because then there's like all... So the whole plot is just about trying to get... Or it should have been all about them in the quantum realm. Or like about the process of getting her, which it's not.
It's not.
It's about...
Other stuff.
It's about... completely unrelated stuff, basically, or very tangentially related stuff.
Yeah, because the two villains in this movie are Hope and Hank have been buying the materials for their quantum experiments from a criminal because they're named on
Walton Goggins.
Yeah, named Walt. Yeah, named Walter Walton Goggins. And he's funny in this movie. Everyone's good in this movie. Except I don't. Maybe Michael Douglas isn't good. I can't tell.
Wait, really? I liked Michael Douglas. Really? I thought he was fun. I don't know.
I can't. I don't know. So much of him in this movie is him just being like, "Oh, you stop flirting with my daughter. We got a plot to do."
Yeah, I don't know. What the movie doesn't have very much. That's the funny thing too, is Scott doesn't have a good relationship with Hank or Hope in this movie either. He hasn't talked to them in like years.
Yeah, like, it's like basically it's like Scott breaking the Sokovia Accords because he used Hank Pym's technology to do it, sort of made them criminals too. Like, you get the feel, because, like, so, like, Hank and Hope are also on the run from the government, and they blame Scott for that. And I'm actually not sure that that logic really tracks, because if they have superpowers they're not supposed to have, I don't know why they got blamed for what Scott did with this basically stolen suit.
Oh, yeah, and also, why aren't they just on the run because they have to register with the government, right? I guess they don't want that to be the deal.
Yeah, but like it just seems like at this point, Hank and Hope have not, like they could have just signed the Sokovia Accords. What do they care? The Sokovia Accords are mostly about don't go to other countries, which they're not trying to do.
There's a million parts of this movie. The whole movie is like this.
Like
where everything is just like,
there's no reason Hope can't just say, yeah, sure, I promise not to go to Sokovia. Like, I promise not to go invade another country. Like, that's what the Accords are about.
Well, and also, too, the consequences Scott got for breaking the Accord and, you know, doing a fight and all of that stuff was just house arrest.
Well, so, like, but that was a plea deal. Like,
I know, but what would be the consequences for them, him just having their equipment? Like, would they have just had to pay a fine?
Oh,
like, they would have been, whatever deal they would have gotten would have been less.
But, but Scott, I'm just saying, Scott is looking at 20 years in prison if he breaks his plea deal.
I understand. What I'm saying is, wouldn't Hank and Hope get a better deal than that?
Because they, because they did even less.
Yeah, and then at that point, like, would they just be on probation? Like,
yeah, no.
I know house arrest is a thing, but it's not like
I don't think the logic of why Hank and Hope are also on the run from the FBI really tracks.
But I don't know. I mean, that's like that's not something that even the stuff more that I was like, okay, sure, is that then he calls them and is like, I had a vision of your dead wife. And they're like, okay, yeah, but they kidnap him and they're like, we only have 2 days to do this. We need, so too bad your house arrest is up in 2 days because we need to do this for 2 days or she'll be lost forever.
So it's worse than that because that line about you have to do this in the next 2 days, they learn that after they kidnap him, after they do the experiment, when Janet takes over Scott's body and tells them they only have 2 days. So they initially steal him and force him to break his house arrest when they don't actually know about the time limit yet.
I do think someone says something like, these quantum things won't last long. It's unstable.
And sure. But I'm just saying, like, but the idea that they literally have a deadline comes after they've already been acting like they have that deadline.
Yeah. Yeah. And Scott doesn't want to be there. The entire movie, he's like, could I just go back home? I need to go back home. So it's weird that he's the main character. He doesn't, I don't know. I'm just like, it's not really a Scott Lang story.
It has that same plot. All the plot is all about Hank and Hope and Janet and their family. And Scott, the way they make Scott involved is by saying that because he's been to the quantum realm. So basically, remember how Scott, when he comes out of the quantum realm, says he doesn't remember anything that happened in there? The movie does something I think is fine, where they say, oh, stuff happened in there that we didn't even show you. Things happened to him in the quantum realm that you didn't see in the movie Ant-Man, which I think is fine because we know that it was like subjective. And what you find is that he met Janet in the quantum realm and she put something in his head and they need that signal to get her back.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more like if this was basically like if this was a Wasp movie, if Hope was the main character, a plot point would be, oh shit, I need to get my ex-boyfriend out of house arrest for a second to use his brain. And then he wouldn't be important anymore.
Yeah, I mean, he could be there. Or yeah, whatever, like she, but you wouldn't.
Yeah, she. There's a reason for him to be there. There's not a reason for him to be the main character.
No. And then there's stuff where it's like, okay, we need to break into my daughter's school because she has the suit. She has a miniaturized one of my suits or whatever.
So that I think that's the worst scene in the entire movie structurally, because it's presented as a complication, but there's no complication. They just get it. Like his, like Scott's suit is broken and he's like shrunk down to little kid size and there's some like funny scenes, but it doesn't cause an actual problem. They walk into the building, they pick up the trophy, they walk out of the building.
Yeah. Even like, and yeah, just, yeah, you're right. Just some silly things happen. If Cassie saw them, it wouldn't be a problem.
No.
She's cool and likes them. She could have just like called her and asked for it and be like, I need it. And she would have been like, cool, Dad. Like, it's... Yeah.
I noticed when I watched that. That's the one where I noticed where I'm like, this structurally is meant to be a complication in the plot, and it just isn't. It's just fine. Nothing bad happens. It's not dangerous. The biggest thing that happens is a teacher sees him, and it's like, and then, even if the teacher realized he was looking at a tiny little adult, who cares? What's the teacher gonna do?
Yeah. Yeah, also, why didn't they... why didn't Wasp just shrink down and get it?
She was there the whole time. She's just laughing, watching him hop.
Why didn't... whatever.
Because...
that's one thing in this movie, too. They make Ant-Man's powers worse than they were in the last movie. He can no longer get big and control it, like he can in Civil War.
Yeah, in this movie, they say that when you get big, it makes you tired. And he gets so tired that his suit, at the very end, when he gets gigantic, he passes out like instantly.
And the one scene when he gets big is very fun. It's cool. It's a better power if he can get big.
Yeah.
Watching the movie now, I'm like, he should have been getting big the whole movie.
Yeah.
And they should have been had a villain that could fight a big Ant-Man.
Yeah.
Instead, the villain's powers are terrible. Like, she can't even fight them. Like, she can phase, but, like, not in a X-Men Kitty Pryde style, like, complete control over it. She's phasing through people and, like, throwing them into the ground and stuff.
Yeah, so the deal with Ghost in this movie is that her father was... I think his name's Elias Stone. He's Egghead in the comics. He's another Iron Man villain. He is an Ant-Man villain. But you know, there aren't that many Ant-Man villains. He did a quantum experiment when she was a little girl. They do that. It has the same problem Iron Man 2 has, where it's like she thinks Hank Pym betrayed her scientist father. And then Hank Pym's just like, that's a lie. He was a traitor and he stole the materials. And it's like, what's happening in this movie? I thought Hank Pym was a bad guy. Why can't he have betrayed her father?
And then the worst thing, he's not a bad guy, Marley. I re-listened to the Ant-Man episode. You keep saying he's meant to be a bad guy, and I keep saying he's meant to be a good guy in the movie, and they just did a bad job.
But everyone who knows Hank is like, Hank is a weird asshole who pushes everyone away.
You're right.
That is supposed to be the idea. Even if he's not a evil man, he's supposed to be an unpleasant man.
Yeah, and it's also like the entire thing is just a misunderstanding, because it's like that she's getting help by Bill Foster.
Yeah.
Goliath in the comics, played by Lawrence Fishburne, who I thought had a tiny part in this movie, but is actually kind of the main villain.
Yeah. So the idea is that like she was caught in a quantum explosion, and so she's like out of phase with reality, which hurts her. And also is going to kill her, but today, it's going to kill her today. It turns out.
Again. Yeah.
But then there's also a line where it's like, oh, but for a while, S.H.I.E.L.D. got a hold of her. And, you know, we know S.H.I.E.L.D. was really Hydra, so they were using her as like an evil assassin. But she's not an evil assassin in this movie. In this movie, she just wants to fix her painful medical condition.
Yeah. And I don't understand, too, why all of the ant people, when they meet her, they don't really offer to like help her.
No.
Like, it's very, because so, they can't, because...
Well, because what Bill Foster says is, we know you're looking for Janet, we think Janet has absorbed all this quantum energy, and we're going to drain that energy to fix Ghost. And Hank's like, that'll kill Janet. And Foster's like, I don't think it will. And then they don't, like, have a conversation about the equations to see what will or won't work.
And then the weirdest thing is, so then they break out, right?
Yeah.
And they break out, they beat up Ghost. Ghost is knocked down, and then it just cuts to them in the next scene, and they're at the quantum tunnel, and it's like, shouldn't you tie up Ghost? Yeah. Shouldn't you do... They just leave and act like they didn't get kidnapped.
I know.
They don't... Or like, you know, what Iron Man would have done in that situation is killed them both. Like, it's a very weird...
Well, but like, I mean, Bill Foster's their friend. It is just a misunderstanding. They kind of know it's just a misunderstanding.
But they don't say that. They're not like... Because it would just get solved of like, okay, well, we'll bring her back. We're going to be able to solve this. In the next scene, Ghost is like, I'm going to go and fuck him up. And Bill's like, I think actually they might be right. And she's like, screw that. Well, she has no personality.
I know. The worst thing is she's like, Scott Lang has a daughter, right? We'll grab her and use her as a hostage. And Bill Foster's like, no, we can't. That's evil. And so she doesn't. And that doesn't happen.
That's what I'm like, what happened with this movie? And then again, like, that's the weird thing too, is it's like, it's the worst thing about this movie is just that it's boring. It's fine. I had a good time watching it.
This movie does have three full separate writing credits. There's two teams and Paul Rudd. This movie went through a ringer, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a mess. Like, you can tell there's so many things that happen where they were like, it must have just used to make no sense. I think the issue with this movie is that it has to be grounded in the MCU and be that level of grounded. Mm-hmm. When I think that this movie should just be way more slapstick and be way more pushed to being like the tone of something like Peacemaker or whatever. There's like a group of like mafia guys who are fighting them and stuff. They should have a supervillain with them.
Yeah.
Like if they just had a, like, whatever, a Tombstone with them or stuff.
Yeah, right.
If they just had a Lizard Man with them, then I'd be like, oh, they're cool. But instead, there's just three guys with guns who are hunting them. And I'm like,
yeah.
Who cares?
And so much of the plot is based on Walton Goggins trying to get them. And he's so unimportant, ultimately, that the supporting characters defeat him. It's the ex-cons who beat him.
Yeah. And also, like, Ghost is so unthreatening. Her powers are so much worse than the Ant-Men's.
Yeah.
Like, it's not...
But they do also, they do make this movie, I think, so much of this movie is based around the fact that Hank Pym's giant laboratory shrinks down into a suitcase size. And so both villains are just trying to steal the laboratory. The mafia guys want to sell it and Ghost wants to use it. But I think because this movie is so based on the idea that when you shrink things down, they're light and become toys, they never in this movie say that Ant-Man and Wasp maintain their body mass when they're little. And I watched it pretty carefully, and they pretty much never hit anyone when they're little in this movie. So in this...
They do a little bit,
A tiny bit, but not like in the first one. It's not like in the first one where they make a big point of the fact that he's still strong when he's little. In this movie, they almost always get big again before they hit someone. There's way more shrinking and growing in this movie.
Yeah. Well, also, because in this movie, they don't fight a villain that can get small.
Yeah.
Which I think is a big lost opportunity. I think it
would have been... Yeah, well, no. The missed opportunity is he needed to fight a villain who could get big. There should have been a giant man versus giant man fight in this movie, because we've never seen that.
Yeah, it would have been cool. Instead,
like, Bill, think how cool, like, you know, the whole point, they say in this movie...
Goliath is in this movie!
Yeah, exactly! Bill Foster's in the fucking movie, and he's the villain! Lawrence Fishburne should have gotten gigantic!
Yeah. Yeah. He should have gotten bigger than him.
Because, sure, Lawrence Fishburne's sort of an old man now. Guess what would still be scary? An 80-foot-tall old man.
Yeah, they didn't need to be that old.
But I'm saying
wrote the movie. They could have done anything.
But I'm just saying, even if you wanted to be Lawrence Fishburne, I'll watch giant Lawrence Fishburne. That sounds great.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, I don't know.
There's even a scene where they like comparing who's gotten bigger, and it's like that. If that's not a setup for them to fight, what is the point?
I don't I don't know. It's funny. I was talking about like how excited I was for them to finally have Kitty Pryde in a movie.
Yeah.
And this made me be like, I don't know, maybe they'll fuck it up. Ghost isn't cool in this. It's not that good. I guess the difference is Ghost can't make other things intangible.
Not in this, which Kitty can do. I mean, also, it's like, Kitty's not really cool because of her power. Her power is cool, but she's just like a cool character. So like, yeah, they could fuck it up. If someone, I mean, they have fucked it up. I love Elliot Page, but Kitty's not cool in X-Men 3.
Yeah.
It's easy to fuck Kitty up.
Her
powers are not inherently interesting. You have to write, she's interesting because she's just a great character.
It's the same thing with this movie too, though, where it's just the fight choreography's bad.
Yeah.
Like, if the trick to making Kitty or Ghost cool would be give them interesting choreography based on their ability to phase through people.
Yes.
Like, the way you should do it is have it be a martial arts character where people are punching through Ghost and then Ghost is throwing them to the ground and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, the best action scene in this movie is there's a big car chase through San Francisco where all three factions are all chasing after each other. And there's a few moments when Ghost is cool, and it's because they're copying the two Ghost characters from Matrix 2 in that movie's best action sequence, which is a car chase.
Yeah.
Because Ghost does do some cool stuff in the car chase where she's like phasing in and out of cars and knocking people off motorcycles and stuff.
Yeah.
And they do it. I like the quantum effects of her, which is that like at all times there's like three other hers superimposed over her doing different acting choices. Like, like the idea that like all her different possibilities are all happening at once. And like that looks kind of neat. It's just, she's just not an interesting character.
Yeah, and she doesn't have any reason to be doing anything, really. Like, she's just confused. At the end of the movie, they're friends with her.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the simplest version of this movie would have just been they bought these equipment from a criminal, and the criminal is after them, and the criminals fucking hired the Ghost to get them.
Yeah.
Then the Ghost would be doing it for money, which would be fine.
Yeah.
That's why Ghost does things.
Yeah, and then you'd have Ghost be capable.
Yeah.
And doing things on purpose.
Yeah.
If
Ghost was just working for Walton Goggins, that would be fine. And then they could even betray each other at the end, so there could be three factions at the end. You could basically do the same movie.
Yeah. And then also have them have a friend who can get big.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, literally what it could be is at a certain point they steal the laboratory and then his henchman could get giant and has to fight two big guys
or
whatever.
Which could be cool. There's so many ways you could do it. I do want to say what I like about this movie is that it feels like a Fantastic Four movie. I like that it's all about super science and other dimensions and family. I like the design of the laboratory. I like the mix of like a lot of the laboratory is made out of little things he's made big. I like the quantum realm, how it looks. I like the, like, if you imagine that this was a movie where they're trying to get Sue Storm out of the negative zone, it's like, this feels like basically a Fantastic Four plot. And in 2018, I thought we were never going to get a Fantastic Four movie. So I was like, I'll take it.
Yeah. And it's like if in a Fantastic Four movie, the main character is like Spider-Man who happens to be there.
Yeah, except Austin, as I said last time, there are a lot of Fantastic Four comics where one of the main characters is Scott Lang and the premise is, why am I here? So that's actually...
So you loved it.
That's actually part of what makes it feel like a Fantastic... One of the things that Fantastic Four does sometimes is Scott Lang's there and he's like, I shouldn't be here.
I actually need to go take care of my daughter.
That was the status quo when I was reading Fantastic Four in the 90s.
That's so fun.
Is Reed was dead and they replaced him with Scott and he was like, I am not qualified for this.
I mean, that is the greatest gift of reading the comics for enjoying these movies, is that even if the movies are bad, they are echoing some comic that is also probably bad. But if you like those comics, you'll still go, that's nice. I like that.
The Matt Fraction, Mike Allred, FF comic where Scott is the leader is actually good.
Okay.
So that's, it's the Fantastic Four go on a mission and they're like, we're going to be gone for 5 minutes. And during those 5 minutes, each one of us is picking a replacement to guard the Earth in case something crazy happens in those 5 minutes. And yeah. So someone picks Scott Lang to be the science one. I think Thing picks She-Hulk. I think Sue picks Medusa. And then Johnny forgets to pick someone. And so he just asks his girlfriend if she'll do it. And they give her a mechanical Thing suit to wear. And then the Fantastic Four disappear. And then the 5 minutes are up and they just don't come back. And they don't know where they are. And this team of weirdos is like, I guess we're the Fantastic Four now. Maybe forever. And it's a great comic.
Yeah, man. Well, that would have been fun if what happened in this movie is that something like that. if it had been Hank and Hope also get lost in the quantum realm and it's Scott has to go find them or I don't know, whatever.
Yeah, there's a lot of things you could have done.
Who cares?
Who cares? We care. That's why we're doing this podcast.
Yeah, who cares? I don't. You really seem to think it's important that we care.
It's important that we have opinion. Like, I don't know. Yeah. I think it's important that if the movie's not that good, that matters to us.
Yeah. Is it?
So
no. What I'm saying is, you know, it's very easy to come up with pretend like imaginary ways a movie could be better. That's what I'm saying.
Oh yeah, yeah. And I've and I've talked about that where like as a fan and as an amateur critic and as a very distant peer, I don't actually like to go down the road of like here's a different movie they could have made. I don't think that's a very good use of anybody's time because you could have made any movie. There's no rules
this
about
movie
what movie
too,
you make.
I'm sure got super screwed by being in between Infinity and Endgame. Like there must be a tiny little bit of a world that they got to play in and things that they got to do making this movie. Like I have no idea what the constraints were, but they had to be a lot.
So the thing that I think is better about this movie than the first Ant-Man is I do think the first Ant-Man, you can tell it's two different people's movies spliced together incorrectly because it's what happened. And I think this movie is very consistent and it feels like one movie. But I do think what this movie consistently is so aggressively low stakes. It wouldn't even be a good episode of a television show. Like if this was
literally the one high stakes moment where I'm like, whoa, what's going to happen is the after credits teaser.
When
they get blipped or whatever.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I'm like, whoa, something happened.
It really is. When they go in, when they finally go in and save Janet, they're fighting Ghost. Ghost is defeated by Hank and Janet's quantum spaceship returning and crashing into her. It's not even Scott and Hope. Scott and Hope absolutely could have beaten her, but they just don't by luck.
Yeah.
This quantum spaceship crashes into Ghost. Janet comes out. She's like, hey, Jelly Bean, that's what I call my daughter because Scott calls his daughter Peanut. So that's fun, I guess. Yeah. Scott's just like her mom. That's why they're in love.
Yeah. Also, here's the weirdest thing, right? He finds her in the quantum realm. She's been in the quantum realm for 30 years?
30 years. Hopes.
And she just is normal. She's normal and well-adjusted.
I know.
She's just like, hey, what's up? And he's like, we got a lot to talk about. That's why I'm like, they shouldn't have her in these movies. They had no idea what to do with her being, like, she should be, like, Something should be fucked up.
Yeah, let's do the thing I said not to do. Let's write a different movie. They should have brought her out of the quantum realm in the opening scene of the movie, and she's all messed up and evil now. And the movie is about figuring out what kind of weird aliens living in her brain.
Or what? I don't know. She should. I mean, she's not even really in this movie. They didn't figure out what her deal is.
No, she's almost in the last movie as much as this one, and there wasn't an actress playing her.
She comes back, and Ghost is still freaking out, and she's like, "Don't worry, I'm magic now." Touches Ghost, her hand glows and fixes Ghost.
Just fixes her. So if Ghost and Foster had just let them do their experiment, they would have just done that. They would have just fixed her. Nothing bad would have happened.
Lucky thing, Janet is magic now.
Yep.
And still normal.
So in the comics, the equivalent of the quantum realm, the place you go if you shrink down so small that you disappear, is like, they don't think they call it the Microverse anymore because that's tied into the comic Micronauts, which Marvel doesn't own the license to anymore. But basically, I think they call it Subatomica sometimes. The point is, you shrink down into another universe, and that universe is exactly like ours, except it lives inside an atom.
Mm-hmm.
And that universe has, like, people. There's villains who lived out there. There's planets of people. And I feel like this movie does actually require that to be how the quantum realm works. Like, Janet's got, like, a cloak she didn't have. Like, she's, like, clearly, there's clearly stuff in there. But, like, you don't see any of it. It doesn't matter. It's so weird.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep, 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 yep.
There obviously is, like, a town somewhere in the quantum realm where she was.
I guess so. I don't know. Yeah, she's wearing a very nice outfit. And then they're like, you know, we talked a lot about like what it means to be a hero, what the hero does at the end of this movie.
Yeah.
No one does anything at the end of this movie, right?
That
just kind of works out.
So what I was going to say, what I like about this movie is I do think it's more consistent. I like that the movie manages to bring back and use well every funny supporting character from the first movie. That's hard to do. Yeah. It's hard to bring back the comedic characters in the sequel. A lot of times either they're not in it or they are in it, but it doesn't work. They all work in this. The ex-cons are great. Michael Peña's great. There's a scene where he gets stuck with truth serum and they use that to do his like funny recap voiceover bit again.
That's a fun
that stuff's fun good scene. But the thing that I think is even weaker in this movie than in the first movie is, remember how in the first movie no one learns any lessons and nobody changes, but we know the arc of the first movie was supposed to be Scott becoming the good person his daughter already thinks he is. And we know that because like three characters say it. It's not what happens because he was already a good person, but we know what they were shooting for. In this movie, nobody says any line like that at all. They don't even pretend this movie has a point. There's some talk about Scott needing a partner, which means starting to date Hope again. But he knows that. He loves having partners. He has a bunch of coworkers and his daughter and his ex-wife. He has no problem forming meaningful emotional relationships. And None. He would love him and Hope to be friends again. And then they are.
Yeah, and he has no problems. He's doing great. He seems like literally the world's best father.
I know. He's spent his house arrest like building a really elaborate escape room for him and his daughter to cosplay being Ant-Man heroes together.
Yeah, this movie has the most, if you know that his daughter becomes an Ant-Man, like most aggressive winking to camera possible of her just being like, I want to be an Ant-Man one day. Why can't I be an Ant-Man? So it's going to be so funny if she's never an Ant-Man in one of these movies.
They recast her with, like, a more famous actress for the next movie. She's definitely an Ant-Man in the next movie.
Because she's an adult now.
Yeah, but there is an adult her in Endgame, and then that's not going to be her.
Okay.
It's the third person is going to play Cassie.
Thank God. Because she's gonna be in Quantum Mania.
Yeah, she'll definitely be an Ant-Man.
Who cares?
Her name's Stature in the comics. It's awful.
I think it's funny for me to keep saying that she becomes an Ant-Man.
She should. She should just be an Ant-Man. One of my favorite jokes, there's a great This is also like, there's this thing that happens sometimes where people will be like, Condiment King is a real Batman villain. Comics are crazy. And it's like, he's a joke in the comic. Comics can also make jokes. Yeah. Like, people think if it's real, it must be serious. Anyway, there's a great joke character who is real in the comics, which is Daredevil has a villain named Stiltman, who is wearing a robot suit where only the legs extend. And there is a character who sometimes fights Daredevil and Spider-Man, who is a woman who has the Stiltman suit. And her name is Lady Stiltman.
That's funny.
And she's great.
Lady Stiltman.
I love Lady Stiltman.
I read a Civil War comic where it's Punisher like almost kills Stiltman.
Blow his whole lower half off or something.
Yeah, the comics are great. Stiltman should have been in this movie.
He'd be bad. Stiltman is great. He gets
Stiltman
really...
could have fought Big Ant-Man.
Yeah, who better to fight Big Ant-Man than a man who gets very tall?
Yeah. Geez. You know.
Do you think Stiltman would be better if he was called the Elevator?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And he says, let's elevate. Yeah. I will say, rewatching both of these Ant-Mans makes me so not excited for Quantumania. I don't know why. Like, I was excited for it.
Yeah.
And it might be really cool. I like the name.
Yeah, I like the name. Quantumania hopefully just has one writer, because if it does, it's my friend Jeff Loveness, who is a very good writer and might do a very good job.
Yeah, I have faith. I don't know. Yeah, you're right. If it doesn't have five writers,
that would help. They're going to fight Kang. It's going to be Jonathan Majors is going to be in it.
I mean, just leaps and bounds a better villain than they've ever had. I hope that he gets to be in it.
I know. Yeah, I hope that the Quantumania Kang isn't just a misunderstanding and he's not evil.
Yeah, not evil, not even there. Also, this is the same thing as the first Ant-Man, where the bad guy is just evil because they went crazy for some reason.
Yeah, it's not good. But I do care.
I care deeply. Oh, you know what is funny? You say on the first Ant-Man that was the first movie that you like stopped caring about the movies when they came out on that episode.
Yeah, I know.
And very much when this one came out and people were like, is it good? Should I see it? I was like, I don't know.
No, I remember at the time I thought that Ant-Man and Doctor Strange were as good as each other. Mm-hmm. And that's not true. Doctor Strange is a pretty good movie.
Yeah, that's so fun. Yeah.
Doctor Strange is better than I remember it, and the Ant-Man movies are worse than I remember it. I also remember Captain Marvel as being about as good as these Ant-Man movies, and I now am very interested to see if that's true or if Captain Marvel's more like Doctor Strange and better than I remember it.
Yeah, who knows?
We will in 2 weeks.
In 2 weeks. It's Captain Marvel. Fuck! I had a joke I was gonna do and I forgot about it. Can you pretend that this is the beginning of the episode instead of the very end? Really?
Yeah,
quickly?
Of course. Yeah. Hi, I'm Marley Halpern Grazer. I'm 37. I write cartoons.
I'm Austin Halpern Grazer, and I'm really excited to talk about Captain Marvel.
Oh, that's not the movie we're talking about.
Oh,
it's Ant-Man.
No, I got him confused. That's the whole joke.
You basically did that joke last episode.
No, it wasn't a joke that time. It was true. Oh, okay. I got confused about which one it was. What I was thinking is I was just going to text you, just finished Captain Marvel pretty good last night. And I was like, I should do that on the episode. And then I did neither.
Instead you did no, just like, I was going to say, like this movie, you forgot to do a joke, but that's not true. This movie has a lot of good jokes. That's what the movie has.
Yeah, it just doesn't.
Have a movie.
It doesn't have a movie. I don't know. It's so hard to make a movie. And also so hard when like, you know, the things that they were trying to do, they did well in terms of like, you know, the jokes come back and the supporting characters all get to do things. Oh, Judy Greer's way better. She gets some jokes in this one.
Yeah, she's in this movie less, but she's funny in the scenes she's in.
Yeah, she gets to do some jokes.
I did think of that. Yeah, because she has a fun bit where when the whenever the FBI are sweeping Scott's house and hassling him because they correctly suspect he's sneaking out of his house, she just keeps being like, "You need a warrant. This is harassment." Her cop husband just keeps being like, they don't need a warrant. This, it's part of the plea deal. They're allowed to do this.
Yeah.
And it's funny.
I think that this movie, the deal is they were like, okay, Ant-Man was great. Let's just do Ant-Man again. Sort of. And then they didn't have the best script ever written, as Joss Whedon said about the first Ant-Man script to build off of.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I bet you if I watched them back to back, I would think they're exactly as good as each other.
I think they have slightly different strengths and weaknesses. But I think because the first Ant-Man is trying to have a point, it hurts it more that it doesn't. I think because this movie's not trying, it's almost as fine. But I think there's cooler action sequences and funner moments in the first Ant-Man.
Yeah.
We'll never know if they used Edgar Wright's storyboards or not, because he won't watch the movie to find out. But I'm sure they did.
Yeah.
Because there's some very cool visual stuff in the first movie, and there really isn't.
It's just so weird because he there's so much cool visual stuff with him in Civil War in the one scene he's in when he gets to be big. That's like some of the best stuff.
It was really... Well, because he... Well, so one thing I do... Another thing I like is... So, well, okay, there's something they do in this movie I don't like that does lead to a scene I do like. Scott Lang is using a prototype suit in this movie, and the only reason that matters is that it's broken. Mm-hmm. And there's all these scenes where the only conflict that there is that he can't grow or shrink to the size he's trying to grow or shrink to.
Yeah.
And I feel like they're doing, like you know how it, like in Iron Man 3... A lot of the best scenes are the scenes where Tony's suit isn't working or he doesn't have all the pieces of it. And you're like watching him overcome that obstacle. But the reason that works is because Iron Man's awesome. Yeah. And it's cool. It's cool to, for him to lose some of those awesome powers and succeed anyway. Mm-hmm. I think it's a fundamental misunderstanding of Ant-Man to think you can do that with him, because Ant-Man's powers suck. And you need to work so hard to convince us they're cool. Definitely don't break them.
Yeah.
You have to let Ant-Man do his things.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that Ant-Man's can't grow or shrink to the right size for most of this movie sucks.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what I like about that is during the car chase scene, he tries to grow gigantic and it doesn't work. And so he ends up being like 15 feet tall. Mm-hmm. And so he's like 15 feet tall for like the whole chase. And I actually love that, because that's about how tall Giant Man actually was in the 60s. And I think it's a fun height, because he's not so, he's like a size where he can still like interact with the environment, but he's like big. I think it's cool. I like that he's that size for a chunk of the movie.
Yeah, it would be cool if he was doing that the whole movie and got big all the time. You want to say how many Iron Mans you're giving it?
Yeah, I give this movie one Iron Man, because there's one Iron Man villain explicitly in the movie, Ghost.
Yeah.
So this movie makes me think about Iron Man one time. How many of the films Iron Man do you give this? How good is this movie compared to Iron Man?
I don't know, 0.6.
Really?
Is that too low?
Too high, right? You've given movies you like.
I gave
you
the last one 0.7.
Didn't you give like Thor 0.6?
No, I gave Thor like 0.85. It's insane how badly I've done this.
All right, fine. So you like...
No, so I gave Ant-Man 1.7.
Okay, so you like this a little less than Ant-Man.
I think
that tracks. I think that's right.
I don't know, man. We're in deep enough.
I just think you probably shouldn't have given Ant-Man a 0.7. Ant-Man probably should have been a 0.5 for you.
I think I gave Iron Man 2 a 0.5, though.
Oh, I like these movies better than Iron Man 2.
See? I don't have much to work with here.
Yeah, yeah.
But in that one, it was very exciting. That's when I said I gave Thor 1.3.
I am actually, even for us who are bona fide maniacs, I am surprised that out of these 22 movies, Thor is probably in my top 6.
Oh, yeah. Thor's in my top Thor.
I actually am surprised that I still like the movie Thor so much, to the point where I'm like, oh, Black Panther's great. It's more like Thor than I remembered, and I'm complimenting it.
It's very funny. I mean, I think it's because it makes a special if we like Thor, because people don't like it.
Yeah, but like that would be the case for Incredible Hulk too, and I know that movie's not that good, and I do like that movie, but I'm like, yeah, it's not a good one. But with Thor, I'm like, I don't know, they were just all, I'm surprised at how well the dramatic parts of Thor hold up, and how much I missed them, and wish the other movies had more stuff like that.
Like, rate, and comment if you want us to do a second episode on Thor.
Yeah, like, rate, and comment if you want to just know that I've watched Thor again and enjoyed it. I don't have to tell you about it.
Yeah. So what's next, Marley?
Oh, I think we jump right to Avengers Endgame.
No,
right?
we gotta go back to the 80s when you were born, and I wasn't even.
I think you'll find we're going back to the 90s in this one.
When I was born?
This is, well, yeah, probably, maybe before. I think you're like negative, you're probably, I bet this movie takes place in like 1992.
Yeah, there's no way it takes place in 1997.
That'd be weird.
So, right when our sister Delia was a toddler?
Yeah, right. Simpsons is new. They haven't even started to run out of ideas for Simpsons episodes yet.
Unlike the MCU, where they're...
They'll never run out of ideas.
Yeah. Oh, man. They gotta just start making X-Men movies. That's what I'm thinking. I'm like...
I'm so scared for them to make X-Men movies.
Yeah.
I can't handle it. I don't know. Have we talked on the podcast about how I refuse to talk about X-Men on this podcast because I both love and hate... I love the X-Men so much and hate almost everything that's ever been done with them.
Yeah, we're going to do it. We're going to watch X-Men. At least the first one of them. I don't know. There's so many.
Let's only watch X-Men Apocalypse and just talk about how great Oscar Isaac is in it.
If you haven't seen that movie, you can't tell he's in that movie. Yeah, or we'll only watch Deadpool 1 and Deadpool 2.
Oh, yeah. Let's only watch Deadpool 3.
Yeah, Deadpool 3.
I do. I mean, those Deadpool.
Okay, we're ending the podcast. talk to you all soon. We love you. Remember when I said that? Bye.
Boop, 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 boop. It's me, the newsman. I'm back. Thank you so much for listening to our episode. Please give us a follow and rating on the television if you liked it. I'm a newsman. Our intro and outro music are by Josh Pan. Art is by Will Patrick. Austin Alpern Grazer edits the podcast. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Hero Rewatch. Marley is Marley HG on Twitter, and I'm Austin HG. For some more Hero Rewatch stuff, look up Austin Alpern Grazer on Instagram and TikTok. Boop, 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 boop. And that's all the news. Boop, 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 boop. Good night, New York.